Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community to prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. So stop by one of its 7 branches or go to MECU.com for more information. And while I've got your attention, before we jump into our next subject here, I want to remind you that WEAA is looking for area restaurants and caterers to provide an in-kind food donation to feed our volunteers for our upcoming spring membership drive. By providing an in-kind donation, you have the opportunity to make a unique contribution to WEAA, and we'll be happy to acknowledge your restaurant or business on the air during the spring membership drive. So you can call 443-885-2075. That's 443-885-2075 for more information. Now, as many of you know who listen to the show, that we have covered what happened with Acorn for a long time. And Acorn has been a guest in this show for the last 17 years and in Baltimore since 1999 when they first got here. And we've covered the struggles and the issues and the battles being waged on behalf of and in the name of poor working people in this community and around the country. And when the right wing went in with their cameras to pose as, it turned out later they really were posing as pimps at all because they were dressed up as college students and then edited their film, but went in to try to undermine Acorn, Baltimore was one of those locations where the undermining took place. And we talked about that. And in some ways, Acorn's organization that was undermined itself internally by the things that went on there, we'll talk about that, that really have hurt that organization. And now you're seeing across the country Acorn's offices, where it does still exist in California and other places, have changed their names. New York has changed the name of the organization. Here, the organization has gone belly up and no longer exists. We're going to talk about what that means, and the Sun papers came out with an editorial saying, good riddance to Acorn, which I found interesting. We'll talk about that. We're joined here in studio by Sonia Merchant-Jones, who is a longtime member and leader of Acorn in Maryland. She was on the last couple of shows we did about Acorn here locally. Sonia, good to have you back. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Michelle Moore will be joining us soon. She was the former Maryland field director for Acorn. And we're joined on the phone by John Atlas. He's author of the forthcoming book, Seeds of Change, The Story of Acorn, America's Most Controversial Anti-Poverty Community Organizing Group. And he's founder and president of the New Jersey-based National Housing Institute. He's a public interest lawyer, activist, writer, former radio talk show host. You can read him in the Huffington Post. And if you go to our website, you can link to the articles he's been writing about Acorn right now that we have there for you to see. So, John Atlas, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Hey, it's great to be here.
And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. We want to hear your thoughts about Acorn, about what its demise might mean to you and your community, and your thoughts on all of that. Let's get two perspectives here. I mean, let me start, John, on the phone, and then we'll go over to Sonia. And hopefully Michelle will be here soon, because I know there's been some give and take between Michelle and Sonia and others about what happened internally in Acorn here, and we want to talk about that, because I think it's important when you're talking about building movements in this community, you got to be kind of put on the table and talk about what's going on.
But yeah. By the way, Sonia, I don't know if you remember me, but I interviewed you for an article I did for Dissent magazine.
I remember you totally.
Yeah.
How are you? When you were at the board of directors meeting in Las Vegas. Yes, I do remember you, John, very well.
Yep.
There you go. So, John, just from your perspective, you've been writing a lot about what's been going on. I think, let me just ask you to do one quick thing. A lot of things have happened in the last month that have really kind of shown what really happened to Acorn, at least in terms of the assault against Acorn, that has not been covered by the major media. And you've been writing about that. Talk a bit about that first, then we'll get into some other more stickier matters.
Well, the big picture on this is that Congress bowed to Fox News, the right-wing echo chamber, and joined in scapegoating an organization that has helped the poor, keep people in their homes, has fight for better wages, stabilized neighborhoods, and helped register people to vote. And they've done this in very, very hard times. And the reason why they were essentially being, the basic reason they're being attacked is because big business and corporations opposed ACORN because of ACORN's fight for increasing living wages and minimum wages. And I hear I'm talking about the restaurant industry, the beverage industry. We're talking about Republicans who opposed ACORN and has been relentlessly attacking them because of their effective voter registration drive. And, of course, ACORN tends to register people who are more likely to vote Democratic because they register very hard to read people, poor minorities. And then there are just ideological conservatives, such as the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal, who oppose ACORN's work because, by implication, ACORN has shown that civic groups working with government are necessary to help the poor, and that you can't rely on simply charity and the free market to improve the lives of poor people. That's basically the big picture.
And the courts now have overturned. I mean, the courts, the federal court, has made it clear that what Congress did to cut off the funding was not legal or proper.
Exactly.
And that.
And that's also, to me, it's an utter national disgrace, quite frankly, that Congress took that action. It's inexcusable. There was no basis for it. There was no hearing. There was no evidence of any wrongdoing regarding ACORN's federally funded programs. And in fact, what most people don't know is that under the Bush administration, ACORN's housing counseling program, as well as its redevelopment program, was considered one of the best in the country and consistently ranked in the top three of the hundreds of nonprofit organizations that applied for funds to do housing counseling. That's the Bush administration.
Now, Sonia, when you were on the show a little bit ago, when this first kind of broke, these stories about ACORN helping alleged pimps and prostitutes to evade taxes. I mean, you, in those discussions, you were very diplomatic, but you were also visibly upset about what was happening to an organization that you spent so much time organizing with.
True, true. I was. And I was upset because the things that occurred, I'll speak about the Baltimore office, which was the office basically where all of the members from the state of Maryland would gather for meetings, so forth and so on. And I guess I was upset about it because I knew that it was something that could have been avoided. You know, of course, I read in the paper the comments of many others, the critics and supporters as well, and one of the things one of the ACORN supporters said was that we reached out to the homeless, we reached out to drug addicts, we reached out to people in distressed communities. And all of that is true to a certain degree, but where do you draw the line? You just can't always bring anyone and everyone in because, you know, that's the right thing to do. You have to kind of vet who you bring into the organization. I'll give an example. There was a member, a leader, a worker in voter registration, and they were going to do a story on this particular person. And the reporter sort of looked into the background and found some information that would have reflected badly on the ACORN organization. I mean, this was a person in a leadership role. And if that had been done before you exposed the members to that person, before you exposed those who worked in the office to this person, that would have been another fiasco that we would have had to have explained. But and that's what people ask me all the time. When they see me on the street and they know that I chaired the Baltimore City Board, they ask, well, how did you let that happen on your watch? And what people didn't understand was that the very staff who we paid, who worked for us, were not managed by us. And if there was any kind of partnership, it was a partnership in appearance and not in substance. And if you ever offered any kind of criticism about how things were being managed, how actions were being executed, then there was so much internal strife that you either let it go or you found yourself organized against, and even some members were organized out of the ACORN organization.
I mean, this is one of the, I think that I want to get to this on the tragedy of this. We're talking about an organization here who nationally at one point had 500,000 members, had chapters, what, 38, 40 some chapters around the country, was doing in some many ways very effective work in voter registration, very effective work in dealing with mortgage issues, very effective work in organizing around the country, ran two radio stations for a while, as well as put out a magazine. All that was going on. And was in some ways a threat to right-wing corporate America, who just did not want this organization around, and was used as a whipping boy during the last election against Barack Obama. But it seems to me that what the problem here, and I'd like to kind of explore it, is because what it means for the future, really, is that while there was an attack from the outside, there were also a lot of internal contradictions that led to its demise.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, that both occurred. And so, I mean, John, I'm looking forward to your new book, but, I mean, are you exploring both those angles?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, the tragedy is that ACORN was getting larger and more effective, but it was always doing this in a conservative era. And it was also running against the tide of most of what you might call liberal or progressive organizations. Very few liberal or progressive organizations were that had clout, let me be clear, that had political clout, had on their agenda the problems of poor people. There's hundreds of organizations out there helping the poor, many of them doing a very good job. There's soup kitchens, homeless shelters, all sorts of nonprofit corporations, churches, but only ACORN was moving an agenda. And what I mean by that is that they were changing what was important and what was possible. The best example is ACORN is singularly responsible for, is most responsible for the increase in the national minimum wage, as well as the living wage movement. I don't know if we can go and explain that to your listeners.
No, living wage is a big struggle here in the state of Maryland, and it was passed.
Right. So they were very, very important in Maryland. They played a role. They were very important nationally in getting the national minimum wage. They had very few allies in the fight against poverty among what I would call liberal or progressive groups. In making what I would call a substantial impact, a substantial change in their life. There's lots of people who are doing smaller things like feeding the hungry, clothing, providing clothes and homeless shelters, and all that's very important. But only ACORN had a strategy for structural changes, more basic changes.
Now, John, we're going to take a short break. We're at the top of the hour. We're going to take a short break and run to traffic and come right back. Michelle Moore has now joined us. She's former Maryland field director for ACORN. I just heard John Atlas, who has been writing a great deal about this on Huffington Post. He has a new book coming out called Seeds of Change, the story of ACORN, America's most controversial anti-poverty community organizing group. Sonia Merchant-Jones is with us, former chair of ACORN here and longtime member and leader of ACORN in the state of Maryland. The number is 410-319-8888 to join in on this conversation. I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by Johns Hopkins Medicine. For the 19th consecutive year, the Johns Hopkins Hospital is ranked number one by U.S. News and World Report Best Hospital Survey. Find out more about the nation's top hospital at hopkinsmedicine.org. We'll be right back with our guest. I want you to join us here at 410-319-8888 with your thoughts on ACORN and its demise and what it really means. And let us know what you think about the Sun editorial that said good riddance. We'll be right back.
In 2008, the Motor City and the City of Brotherly Love were celebrated at the Detroit International Jazz Festival. Enjoy highlights from the festival on this radio station.
On Monday at 7 p.m., the best of the 2008 Detroit Jazz Festival. That's Monday at 7 p.m. on Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community.
Morgan State Bears are MEAC champions. Morgan State's NCAA tournament game is this Friday versus West Virginia, and the team needs your help. All Morgan State University alumni, students, and fans are welcome to the game to show your Morgan pride. For more information, 443-885-3454 or look at our events calendar at WEAA.org. This is a public service of Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community.
This is Leadership in 60 with Justin Jones Fosu, giving you powerful tools to strengthen the leader in you. Excellence is not a skill, it is an attitude. Ralph Morrison. I really do agree with this statement because I think that this is one of the few things that separate those who are excellent from those who are not. I know many of us have heard the now cliche that your attitude determines your altitude, but it has some merit. If you have an attitude of hard work, then you'll usually translate your life into being hard work, whether that's within your house, your company, or your community. If you have an attitude of laziness and complaining, that will also have a translation, and it will read, "I am just like everyone else." Truly dare to be different, for today is the day, and now is the time. For more powerful tools and leadership, visit WEAA.org. Leadership in 60 is brought to you by Public Radio, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community.
Morgan State University Public Radio, 88.9 FM, member-supported, community-approved, WEAA, Baltimore.
Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. Before we leap into our Acorn discussion, I'll join by Michelle Moore as well, former Maryland field director. Andy Green from The Sun is going to talk about the Good Riddance Acorn editorial. He'll be joining us by phone for a few minutes as well. 410-319-8888 is the number here, and we'll get these calls coming in so you can join in on this conversation with our guests. But first, we've got to turn this over to WEAA Traffic. Make sure you get home nice, safe, and sound, and come back and talk to us about Acorn when you hear your ideas. We'll be right back.
Support for WEAA is provided by Luna. Information on flooring available at luna.com/traffic or 877-241-LUNA.
Overturned oil tanker continuing to cause backups on the Pulaski Highway eastbound. The update brought to you by Centrum Silver Ultra Men's. That oil spill there with hazmat on the scene at Contractors Road. One left lane is able to squeeze by. Then on the Pulaski Highway eastbound at the Hayden Bridge, there's another accident. Slowing on the inner loop, Wilkins Avenue to Liberty Road, and delays from Reisterstown Road to Hartford Road. Plus, it's backed up a bit on the outer loop between Providence Road and the Harrisburg Expressway. 95 northbound jammed up between Eastern Avenue and White Marsh Boulevard. 895 slow northbound between the Harbor Tunnel and the 95 merge. Crash in the City Park Heights at Cold Spring. Also accidents in Baltimore County. Eastern Boulevard at Fairview Avenue and Old Bosley Road at Delaney Valley Road. Centrum Silver Ultra Men's, the complete multivitamin scientifically advanced and specially formulated for men over 50. Learn more, visit their website at centrum.com. I'm Joanna Campbell with Baltimore Area Traffic.
Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and we are going to talk about Acorn for the next 45 minutes or so on the show before we go to our Urbanite radio story about music and the brain and John Coltrane and more, but that'll be a little bit later in the hour. Right now, we are joined here in studio by Sonia Merchant-Jones, who's the former chair of Acorn here, longtime member and leader of Acorn from the community side. Michelle Moore has joined us in studio now. She's former Maryland field director of Acorn. Welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you.
John Atlas is still with us by phone. He's author of the forthcoming book, Seeds of Change, the story of Acorn, America's most controversial anti-poverty community organizing group. You can link to his articles on Acorn by going to steinershow.org. They're right there to read. You can join us here at 410-319-8888. We're also joined by Andy Green from The Sun, and we're going to talk about the editorial written in The Sun called Good Riddance Acorn, Baltimore's poor need an advocate, but they deserve one that's more effective than the Association of Community Organizations for Reform Now. And Andy, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Hi, Mark.
Andy, I'm sorry to do this to you, man, but what's your exact title now?
I'm the opinion editor.
The opinion editor?
Yeah.
I mean, they keep moving you around. I wasn't sure.
Yeah, I know.
That's what you are now. Okay. Just double-checking. So let's talk about this. Rob from Baltimore County and the other people calling in, please hold on, and I'm going to get you right into this conversation. But I really, since we have Andy and he can't stay for real long, I want to talk to you about the kind of the thrust of your editorial, which was
right.
Good Riddance Acorn, and why that was the stance you all took.
Yeah, I certainly have a great deal of respect for the goals that Acorn has. You know, they're clearly their intentions were clearly to do work that absolutely needs doing. You know, there are certainly thousands of people in this city and in cities across the country who need a better voice, who need to be able to get together and organize and advocate for causes that are important to them, and particularly in this day and age, help with housing is extremely important. But, you know, the problem that I think Acorn has had was that the group has given itself over the years to, I think, you know, attempts at really sort of eye-catching tactics, and I feel like sometimes their the righteousness of their mission has, I think, clouded them a little bit and has led them to doing things that that don't necessarily help their cause. Ideally, you would want a group that could really hold some sway and bring about political influence. But I think when they've done things like, you know, trying to do the foreclosure liberation, where they broke through the padlock on a foreclosed house while the TV cameras rolled and things like that, it got them publicity. But I don't think it really helped their cause too much with the people who could actually make a difference.
What do you all think about that? I mean, do you want John by phone? Do you want to start, or Sonia?
Yeah, I'll start in by saying I think that's ridiculous. I think that no organization is perfect. The Catholic Church has done more things wrong, more criminal activity, more immoral action than.
But we're not talking about the Catholic Church. We're not talking about the Catholic Church. Let's stick to.
I'm just
Acorn.
Saying.
No. Let's just say this, John. We're not talking about the Catholic Church. I didn't come on here to talk about that. I came on to talk about an organization that really gave low to moderate income families access, and that was compromised due to mismanagement and disorganization. And it's just true. And one of the things that I truly do believe in my personal life is you cannot correct a wrong if you do not admit that everything you did was not fair and square and wasn't right. You'll never grow from that. And that was one of the things that I always spoke about. I stand my ground on that. And I can take the constructive criticism. I can even take the criticism that I don't believe in, that I don't agree with. But I really feel awful when the members call me upset, crying because they did not buy into this, and this was not our vision. This is not what we wanted. When that padlock incident happened and it was run past me and this is what we're going to do, it wasn't, what do you think? How should we proceed? Did you vet this woman? Are you sure that this is her property? I remember asking those questions clearly, only to find out after it was all said and done that the property, she had taken out several loans on the property, if I'm remembering correctly, and that she had absolutely no right. Plus, the bottom line was that wasn't even what the whole campaign was about. The campaign was about people being in their homes, and if the sheriff came to remove them, the decision was made that that person would not leave. I'd never heard that a padlock was going to be snapped off until after it happened. And these are the things that members weren't kept in the loop on. Of course, now, you may have had some members who went along for the ride because, look, let's just face it. When people are anxious over the everyday things that go on in life and they can't meet their needs, you can certainly pump them up to pretty much participate in anything where they feel like they're getting back at the establishment, especially when they feel like they've been cheated, mistreated. Then they do that. But everybody, all of the membership didn't agree to these tactics. We just didn't. That's the truth.
John, I know you want to come back and say something, but Michelle, let me go to Michelle, John, and then Andy, and then I'm going to open the phones here.
Yes, I mean, I want to disagree with the fact that Acorn didn't have political sway. We did build an organization that had a political voice. One of the last meetings we had, and Sonia was very, you know, she chaired this meeting. We had, or not chaired, but you were at the meeting and had a key part in it. We had 100 public housing residents come together about the conditions in public housing. We invited the housing commissioner, the deputy housing commissioner. They said, no way, we're not coming. We're not required by the federal government to attend these types of meetings. But we had 4 city council people who heard about the meeting and came out and then requested an informational hearing at the city council. Jack Young requested an informational hearing. Paul Graziano then was forced to listen to the concerns of public housing. So that I do think that we had a political voice. I also don't think we were mismanaged. I mean, I agree. Acorn is not a perfect organization. We have not done everything perfectly. But, you know, the bottom line is we were a struggling organization. The key problem with Acorn was that we were not funded adequately. I mean, and that's the bottom line. You know, there's a foundation community in Baltimore. The foundation community does not fund organizing. There's very few foundations that fund organizing. They would like to fund advocacy groups that do important work, people who will put out studies. I mean, right when we had the public housing meeting, I read somewhere in the paper, like, you know, 2 years after the ABLE report written by Joan Jacobson, the dismantling of public housing, nothing seems to have changed. Why is that surprising? Why is a report going to change things? I think it takes organizing. And organizing needs to be valued by the foundation community, because otherwise, how are we supposed to have a sustainable organization?
This is silly, but your cup is getting close to the edge there.
Okay. Thank you.
You can say what you want. But
okay.
John, come back, and I'm going to come back to Andy, and I'm going to open the phone to you. John?
Yeah. Acorn has many weaknesses. I spell them all out in my book. They have supervision weaknesses, training weaknesses, internal communication weaknesses. A lot of the things that Sonia said are absolutely correct. If I was a board member, I would be outraged. I would be very upset at some of the things that happened to Acorn. But an organization that is so effective and has been so important to the American people who care about fighting poverty ought to have room to change. And they ought to have the support of the foundation community, the liberal community, the editorial writers, to say, here's an organization that has done a lot of effective things. They have done some. They have certainly committed some mistakes. We need to have space for that organization to make itself better. Now, the fact was, I was at the Sahara Hotel in Las Vegas when some 50 board members were gathered around from all over the nation, struggling to figure out, this was in April 2009, Sonia was there too, how to make Acorn a more reliable, democratic, transparent organization with better internal communications, and just say we're going to deal with our weaknesses and we're going to focus on our strengths.
That's all I'm saying.
It's so easy and irresponsible to say, as the Baltimore press said, that good riddance. It's just wrong.
Well, Andy, let me let you come back on that one.
As I said in the editorial, I believe that the mission of Acorn is important, that organizing is very important, and I hope that out of this, people in the community will come together and find a way to pick up these functions and start something new that can avoid many of the problems that have been discussed here. And I'm certainly very heartened to hear what Sonia just said a minute ago, and I hope that many others can, come through this and look at problems that cropped up with Acorn, with the management, the communication, all that sort of thing, and figure out a way to achieve the goals that Acorn had while avoiding those problems. I think that absolutely needs to happen. Realistically, the political atmosphere was such that Acorn was basically, I think, poisoned in a lot of arenas in the public, and I think it would have been extremely difficult, no matter what that organization did, for it to have rectified that.
I want to open the phones here, but one of the things about what we've been saying here, though, and I think that I'm trying to look at the editorial very fast here, Andy Green, but it seems like a lot of the media in America, when they went after Acorn in this last round, did not bother to cover very deeply former Massachusetts Attorney General Scott Harshberger's report that showed that the scam against them with the video were doctored videos that the judges said that the Congress denying funds was illegal, and the other part of it, though, from the internally inside Acorn, this, I mean, in 1988, it seems to me things began to unravel in some ways when Wade Rathke, who was the founder, covered up for his brother, who stole $1 million or more from Acorn funds, and the battle ensued. And I think that something went deeply awry in Acorn in the last 4 or 5 years that allowed it to be attacked from the right and destroyed from within.
Right.
And that it makes me think of, you know, anybody who's black who grows up in the world of America knows that you know, you're told as a kid, and you tell your children you have to be better than them because they're going to come after you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's exactly what happened here.
Yeah.
And I think they imploded as well as being exploded from the outside.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, I mean, here's the thing, is I'm expecting to hear Acorn attacked on Fox News and on Rush Limbaugh, but I was really disappointed to see the reporting in The Sun. First of all, you know, the cover story by Brent Jones, he covered a public housing meeting. We had a different one with about 85 tenants at the Towns to the Terraces. We got the tenants' water bills reduced from $3,000 to, you know, not as much as we wanted to, but we got tenants' water bills reduced. In that story, Brent Jones talked to our members, never once mentioned that the meeting was organized by the Acorn Tenants Union, never once mentioned that the tenants who he was speaking with were Acorn members. He never once mentioned that. Meetings don't just happen. They don't just spontaneously happen. It takes a sustained community organization to make that happen. So if you're going to, you know, talk about what Acorn is not doing, you should also talk about what Acorn has been doing. And we do have a history of really impacting communities and people in Baltimore.
I want to let Andy respond, and I'm going to open the phones right after that because I promise the people, and there's lots of people calling in who want to join this conversation. But Andy, you want to respond to that?
I would certainly agree that Acorn's work on the water bill issue, for example, was important. But I think that at a certain point, the problems with the organization sort of overtook its ability to do good of that sort on a larger scale.
But that was only because of the onslaught by the Republican Party, by their enemies in the business community, and by the not only the right-wing press, but the mainstream press, for failure to put Acorn's problems in context. In other words, everything that was just said positive about Acorn was buried in the reporting done by not just Fox News, but by Washington Post, the New York Times, and I'm not, I actually read the Baltimore story. I didn't think it was, I thought it was a fair piece, the one by Brent Jones, mostly. But, for example, when the press that was reported on the voter registration problems that Acorn had, 90%, a majority of the time, I think it was 80% of the time, the press never, I'm talking about the mainstream press here, never reported that Acorn had to turn in all voter registration forms, even those that they thought were illegitimate and fraudulent, because the law required them to do so.
Well, let me, since Andy, you were in the middle of a thought when John came in, let me finish your thought, and then I am going to go right to the phones here. So I promise people I get
that. No, that's fine.
Okay, 410-319-8888. Then I'm going to come back with Sonia, because Sonia and I had a discussion before we went on the air a bit about some of the tension between staff, not the same, but all over this country, and rest, and the people who made up the membership of Acorn.
Yeah.
I want to get to that. 410-319-8888. And Rob, you've been holding on forever. Baltimore County, you're on the air.
Okay, first of all, thank you for having me, Mark. But please, man, next time, let's not have such a prolonged wait. But thank you anyway.
Sorry about that. It's just a lot of guests today.
I understand. What I want to say, first of all, is that, you know, the issues with Acorn, whether it be embezzlement, mismanagement, bad communication, whatever, that really doesn't concern me. What I'm really worried about right now is the fact that organizations like Acorn now and in the future are going to be further basically villainized, because as we all know, with the Supreme Court recently making way or allowing for unlimited corporate finance to take place, organizations like Acorn are needed now more than ever. This is not the time to retreat and regress or pretty much fade out into the shadow, because we need this organization more than ever. We all know that Acorn was targeted by the Republican, right-wing conservative movement, because the bottom line was that Acorn had a tendency to register with Democratic voters. Had Acorn been more, pretty much nonpartisan, registering Democratic or Republican voters, they wouldn't have gotten such a huge focus put on them, from the conservative right. But what I also want to say too is the fact that the organization like Acorn, quite frankly, that's pretty typical in my opinion, because I worked with different organizations myself. I worked with one organization in particular, I don't know if I necessarily to say it or not, but what struck me as a young college student was the fact that it seemed to be kind of haphazard. Although we had a lot of young, youthful zeal, our leadership sometimes seemed to be kind of disheveled and not prepared and kind of ad hoc in a way. So, and that seems to be, I think, a trend with organizations that are well-meaning, liberal, but at the same time, not very organized and not highly structured where they should be. But I also like to say, for this final thought, where is Acorn in 2010? Because we need more Acorn more than ever, because this whole unlimited campaign finance situation is taking place, not to mention some of these corporately owned Democrats and Republicans out here. We need Acorn to continue to register Democratic voters. So I got to say, thank you very much, and I'm out.
Rob, thanks so much for holding on and being and bringing your comments to the airwaves. Sonia, what would you say to Rob?
And too bad that we're no longer welcome at the table, just because 20-minute tape ruined 40 years of, progress. And so, too bad that we won't be taken seriously. Too bad that, the voice that people of low to moderate income means has been quieted because of what happened in offices all across this country. And, again, I believe it could have been avoided had there been a true partnership between members and staff. I truly do believe that this is something that we could have avoided. And this really wasn't the first issue where our integrity was questioned. When people weren't being paid on time, when taxes on the property wasn't being paid, when the padlock was broke, it's just things like that that take away from every good thing. Every good thing that you've done every good thing this organization has done has now been misconstrued because, people weren't on top or on point as they should have been.
Well, I mean, so after all of this happened, we took a look at ourselves to say, we did mess up. We made some mistakes. But we made mistakes because we've been operating in a culture of scarcity where we have so much to do. There's so much organizing that needs to be done. So we work 10 hours a day. We accept little paychecks. Some of us don't want to accept a small paycheck. And so trained organizers move on to the labor movement. As soon as we train them, they move to the labor movement. This summer, I went for 5 weeks without a paycheck. That was not 5 weeks, 5 pay periods. That was extremely difficult. It's hard to have an organization operating in scarcity.
Well, let me ask you this question, and again, I said we're going from the inside and out, because I think that the attack by the right wing was very serious against Acorn, and it was a concerted effort to destroy a national organization that was an anti-poverty organization. There's no question about that.
But I think we gave them the ammunition to do it.
Exactly. On the other hand, why, I wonder, from maybe very quickly, before we go back to the phones, John and Andy might jump into this, that an organization that had over $100 million in budget, that had 1,000 employees, 500,000 people were members of the organization from the communities in 38 states and 103 cities, but it seemed Baltimore's office was always struggling for money.
Every office was always
so
struggling for
I'm not
for
quite
money.
Sure why that happened.
And I'm not either.
Well, it was because they were trying to do too much. They grew too quickly, and they did not have the kind of reliable supervisory system in place, nor did they have a reliable even accounting system to make sure all the funds were spent properly and they were properly segregated and there were no conflicts of interest. And there was, and so, and they were, and they were also not what good at what Sonia's saying. Acorn just was not good at communicating to its leaders as well as its members the what Acorn was about. I constantly ran into members as well as leaders who knew less about Acorn than I did, even when I started doing it early on in the research. So Acorn had many problems. I just think on balance, and then when they got this ferocious, literally ferocious right-wing attack that included, don't forget, an attack by the presidential candidate, John McCain,
right,
wrongfully accused them of undermining and destroying the fabric of American democracy. Does anybody recall that?
Well, I do.
I do.
And I want to kind of, I'm going to get a couple calls here, but what you just said, John, and the four of you, I want to explore what it means in the world where some people feel there's a corporate onslaught in America that's really taken over K Street, taken over stuff in Washington, D.C. in a major way, that you no longer have large organizations in opposition like Acorn, and they're gone, and what that means for the playing field out here in the fight for democracy in America. Let me let you all comment on that, but let's first go out. The phones have people have been waiting for 20 minutes to get on the air here. 410-319-8888. David on the West Side, you're on the air.
Yeah, I was just wondering if the organization was that good and did that, you know, many things that they felt were good, why would you worry about what the press said about you all the time, and just why not just concentrate on what your goals were, report to the people that support you financially, you know, whoever was, you know, wherever your funds were coming from, and not worry about what the press says all the time. The other thing is, you have a lot of contractors right now that are working in, you know, Iraq and places like that. When they run into a problem, they just change their name and reorganize and open up in another place. Just wanted to know if any thoughts in that area that you might regroup and then open up under another name.
They've done that in California. They've done that in New York. But we haven't done that here in Baltimore.
I mean, I think part of the problem is, and I, you know, I'm sure Sonia probably might have similar feelings to myself. You know, I gave 9 years of my life to this. It's really hard to sort of start over and say, okay, we change our name, but what's really different? Because we need money, and there is not money out there for community organization, for community organizing. And that's what, you know, we're not going to get the government contracts that Blackwater got. That's not happening. I mean, we got, you know, everybody said, oh, Acorn federally funded, misusing their federal funding to organize poor people and fight for the Democratic health care bill. That's not true. We got 10% of our funding was federal, and all of that was to provide services that needed to be provided. So I think that until people really respect community organizing, there's not going to be another group.
And Andy, from your perspective,
I would say the one thing to bear in mind here is that there are, you know, thousands of people out there, and many in Baltimore, who were willing to pay dues to this organization because they believed in the mission and the importance of organizing, you know, money that they didn't really have to spare, I'm imagining, in most cases.
Sure.
So, I mean, that is, I think, an important thing to bear in mind and to realize that there is a yearning out there for organization and political voice. And so, you know, somebody ought to be able to learn the lessons from Acorn and, you know, take advantage and help channel that.
I just want to add to that why, to answer the fellow's who was on the phone's question directly,
mm-hmm,
why Acorn needed to pay attention to the attacks by the mainstream press was that led directly to the cutoff of funds both by the government and by its foundation supporters, and it also ruined or hurt Acorn's reputation among politicians and even some people in the low-income communities that they were serving. That's why bad press, along with this ferocious attack by the right, was, in the big picture, the reason for Acorn's demise. Not its internal problems. I think Acorn could have worked out its internal problems. I think they could have had some battles. They could have had retreat. They could have brought in management people, just like every corporation, just like the press does when it's in trouble. You have an opportunity and a chance to examine what your weaknesses are. You bring in management consultants, accountants, just as Acorn was doing, and then with the help of supporters, you can change. But
let's hope Acorn does a better job of it than the press does.
Yeah, but the foundations ran as well as the politicians ran from Acorn. It was like they were scared.
So I have a question for Sonia here, but let me go to the phones and we'll come back to this question because I want to approach the very delicate subject you and I talked about before we went on the air. 410-319-8888. Clarence in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Good evening.
Good evening, Clarence.
I just have a question about Acorn as an entity in itself. Before Congress can just, you know, it seems like to, I'm not sure, but it seems like to, it was just an arbitrary action based back by political reasons that the funding was cut off. But isn't there some type of due process before Congress can just, you know, cut off? Were they denied any type of due process, or is it, you know, because I understand that Supreme Court ruled that it was illegal,
mm-hmm.
and maybe that's an education to the public itself, this question. I don't know, you know.
It's a great question, Professor. I'll ask you, hold on, and John Atlas, let me let you take a stab at this first, because you wrote an article about that on March the 11th.
Yeah, well, the court is very simple, said the action taken by Congress was an illegal bill of attainder, which simply means that they cut off Acorn's funds without giving them a hearing, without deciding whether there were any facts that would support the denial of funds. It was, in some ways, as simple as that. The Republicans claimed that Acorn was misusing funds, but they had no evidence to show that they were.
So, and you know, I remember we quizzed a lot of our congressmen about that after it happened. Only two of Maryland's eight congressmen voted against taking away Acorn's funds. That was Elijah Cummings and Donna Edwards. But every other congressman, the remaining of those, all but one, was a Democrat, and they all kind of...
And the reason why they did is they had a good excuse, which was that they didn't want to have the nation divert its attention away from the big agenda that Obama was pushing around health care and financial regulation. And so they were afraid that any focus on anything else would divert the nation's attention. I think they made a mistake, but that was the reason.
410-319-8888. Stephen in Waverly, you're on the air.
Yes. I just want to address the issue of this bigger problem in regards to the movement as a whole around organizing, and that's in regards to organization and groups that are tied with the Democratic Party. And I feel this is the same with the labor movement, with church-based organizations and with community-based organizations that feel that they are have to be tied to the Democratic Party and not have an independent agenda, where they're tied in with foundation money, with corporation money, because Acorn was getting some money from banks from supplying members into getting low-interest loans. And I even sat down and was in a meeting with Michelle. Michelle knows who I am, who said
yes.
that they would not picket Bank of America because they have a deal with Bank of America. And so if you're beholden to money, and I understand we all need money, but let me tell you, there's organizations out there that are not beholden to big money or whatever, who will not lose their principles because they get $10,000 or $50,000 or $100,000 or even $1 million. Because if you get holding and it's a catch-22, because we all need money for organizing, but sometimes you chase the dollar and you're saying that you're organizing poor and working people, really you're chasing the dollar and you're not really doing it, because if it was based about the membership and an organization that was strongly on the membership, it really wouldn't matter if they were getting foundation money or not. We're a small organization of maybe only 20 people, but we're not leaving this city. We're not going to stop fighting. And so I don't understand or whatever, you know, there are situations where, you know, Acorn or whatever thought that they had a monopoly on certain issues around the foreclosure struggle. And we were working on struggle, tried to work together. People would come back to us and told us, well, don't work with you because...
Who is you?
Who is you? The network to stop foreclosures, the All People's Congress, the Bailout the People's Movement. Do you want me to go a little... I can...
No. I just want to identify what you were talking about. I wasn't sure what you were talking about.
Well, I'm talking about there are groups that here in Baltimore,
okay.
that they that will not work with because they are not tied to the Democratic Party and feel that they have a monopoly on the issue, and so they will not work with. So you catch yourself, now you get tapped from the right or whatever, but you don't have allies on the left or whatever, or only those who are also insane.
Let me let people respond, Stephen.
Okay, and Stephen, I have a lot of respect for every organization that's doing good work. I mean, I do respect the work that you do, and I've seen the work that you do. But I you know, as far as Bank of America, they were working with our housing corporation to put, don't know the numbers, but a lot of people work with low to moderate income people and get them into point below market interest loans, counseled and work with them before they default. They would counsel them again. So they were providing a great service for our members and for low to moderate income people in Baltimore who could have gotten predatory loans if we hadn't had this housing program. So that's, you know, that's one thing. Also, Acorn isn't beholden to the Democratic Party. And I think in some of the, I'm not sure if it was in this Good Riddance Acorn piece, but said that a lot of times Acorn is operating in big cities where, you know, Democrats are the political establishment and Acorn is anti-political establishment. You know, we haven't been a mouthpiece for the Democratic Party. And, you know, and I even wanted to correct another caller who said it's great that Acorn's going out and registering Democratic voters. Yeah, we've probably registered a lot of Democratic voters, but we were registering people who were low income and minority voters because they weren't voting, not because we were trying to do a service for the Democratic Party.
And Andy, I think your editorial did kind of address the issue of the Democratic Party.
Yeah, I mean, certainly if you, I got to run after this, but
okay.
I would say that certainly probably the biggest success Acorn had in Baltimore, politically speaking, was the drive to move the city council to single member districts, what was that, 7 or so years ago. That put elected Democrats out of jobs. That certainly didn't endear them to the Democratic Party in the city. But, I think most of us some years later would agree it was the right thing to do.
Andy Green, opinion editor for The Sun, and his editorial that he wrote, Good Riddance Acorn. Thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate you doing it the last second, Andy, and being part of the show.
No problem. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks so much.
Bye.
Let me throw out two other issues here, and I also get folks to join us again at 410-319-8888. We'll get back to the phones. Two issues. One has to do with what happens now with America without an Acorn in it. We'll get to that next. But first, there's an observation I had about Acorn that may be unfair, that I raised to Sonia before he went on the air. And the observation has one of the weaknesses maybe that Acorn had was that it felt as if, and please, if I'm wrong about this, you can leap right in, but if I felt as if the staff was white and the members were black, that in a world in the 21st century where people are trying to build multiracial coalitions in this country to fight for justice, that model can't cut it forever.
Well, I mean,
Sonia, go ahead, Sonia.
Yeah, I do want to speak to that because it did appear that way, and you know, some members did have issue with that. I mean, I remember when there was debate about why there were no African Americans on the staff, and I even had. Organizations throughout the city say, you know, not because they were white, but they were white, and not because the staff was white, but the staff was white, and it appeared as if they were managing, you know, the African American membership to do their bidding, sort of like the membership was a front to their agenda. That's what a lot of people thought. Well, I dispute that totally and completely. No, because I do know that if we did not go along to get along, that we were organized out of the organization. If we wanted to do certain things or wanted certain campaigns to go a certain way, you almost felt like you were being dictated. I talked to one of my mentors, one of the first chairs of Maryland Acorn, Willie Ray. I talked to him, yesterday.
Willie Ray, Willie Ray, right.
And I talked with him yesterday at length. I mean, he wanted to know what was going on and why it was going on the way that it was. And he said to me, he said, Sonia, one thing I want you to do, and Mr. Willie's a little up in age now, and Mr. Willie said, Sonia, I want you to, and he's a real old school guy, he said, I want you to tell the truth and shame the devil. He said, a lot of times I didn't know what I was doing. And I was told to do it this way, to do it that way. And even I personally was organized against in this organization when I saw that type of manipulation taking place. You know, because I said, well, really, are we empowered if we're managed, if we can't? I mean, where do you go where the staff tells the people who've hired them to do a job what they will do and what they won't do? And that is the kind of relationship that existed. And I think that that was one of the things that was the very undoing of this organization, at least in Maryland anyway.
Michelle?
Well, I'm not sure if I agree. I mean, first of all, I would have loved to see more African-American staff. I worked to develop African-American staff, but we, in order for us to have a professional African-American staff, we needed to be able to pay the higher salaries that people wanted. People were leaving.
But you know why I don't agree with that? Because you had people like myself who had been trained. I worked for the Housing Authority of Baltimore City. And I think I brought a lot to the table in terms of how we should do business and how we should conduct ourselves. And, you know, that was met with much resistance. I won't say personally from you, but I was made to feel like too many times that I didn't know what I was talking about. And it was many times that I would say, if we don't do this, this is the result that we're going to get. That's why I'm so frustrated.
Well,
because I believe in my heart, had the members been taken more seriously by the staff, regardless of whether this is not a money issue, this was an issue of how we keep integrity in the way that we were doing business on behalf of the members. This wasn't about the staff and how you all look. It was about really us being partners, and that didn't happen. And
okay, I think we only have a few minutes left. So, Michelle,
okay. I just want to ask you, how were you organized out of the organization?
Me?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Well, there was an issue that arose in August of 2004. And Mr. Willie had a meeting at his home. And, I mean, I don't know if you really want me to get into the real meat of it, but
I think maybe this should.
Okay, that's maybe off the air. But, I mean, we did have a process for people.
I mean, you weren't around. So
no, I know. We did have a process for people to become leaders. After Wade left, Bertha Lewis said, okay, we've got to clean up house. And we have a process where our leaders have to be democratically elected from members in their community. And there was rules about how this happened. The meetings had to have a certain amount of dues-paying members. And, you know, I feel like as a staff person, and I always reached out to people and I said, what do you think? What do you think?
You did.
Well, let me ask this last closing question here. John Atlas, you still with us?
Yes.
John, talk to us a couple minutes because we really have to go into another segment here. And it's about what happens now in America when you have the demise of an organization like Acorn.
Well, hopefully people will pay close attention to what made Acorn successful and what brought down their demise. And then they will take what Acorn did successful and build on that, such as having a democratic organization. They have to follow the rules that Bertha Lewis was trying to implement, which make it truly democratic, make sure that the dues-paying members elected their leaders. Secondly, it's got to be include people of various classes and races. It's got to be cross-class, cross-race. It's got to be multi-issue. It can't be single issue, so that lots of people understand everybody else's issues and problems. And eventually, you've got to replicate one of the key things of Acorn, which was it was able to build a national organization so that they could operate simultaneously on the local level, the state level, regional level, and nationally, so that they could fight for something like the minimum wage. So those are some of the structural elements, and I also think that are very important. I also think the fact that Acorn is a dues-paying organization is important because that also provides a important element of accountability. I'm not going to pay dues to an organization that doesn't fight for me. I'm sure there are other, you know, so that's that. Hopefully Maryland will reorganize, and I hope Sonia helps lead a reorganization of a group that looks and takes all the tactics and strategies of ACORN, but is more democratic. The members actually know what's going on all the time, that there's a better internal communication, and then hopefully, you know, they can build something similar to ACORN, but better.
I'd love to see that.
Me too.
We'll have to watch and see what the future brings with ACORN and with people who have been involved with ACORN around the country. And I think that I want to thank Sonia Merchant-Jones, former chair, and Michelle Moore, former field director for ACORN, to being so open to having a honest and clear discussion about the internal issues as well as what's going on the outside. And I do thank you both. And for the work both of you have done to struggle and fight for poor working class people in this community and to make this a more just society. I want to thank both of you for being in the thick of that fight.
And I thank you on behalf of all the members who put their everything into, you know, being an ACORN member. Thank you.
And John Atlas, thanks for the work you do and the writing you do. We look forward to your new book when it comes out. We'd like to have you back on the air here to talk about the book.
Great. I'd appreciate it. Very intelligent discussion.
Thanks. Good to have you on here. Good to meet you by phone. So, folks, we appreciate you all being part of this. We're going to continue looking at these issues. These issues are important as we figure out the future of our country and our community. When we come back from this very brief break, and I have to tell you, I was on way to the break, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite, Baltimore's monthly magazine of ideas and innovation. In this month's issue, four teams of collaborators explore four very different visions of the city. It's the Urbanite Project, a special annual issue devoted to showcasing outside-the-box thinking from Baltimore's most creative minds. Urbanite is available at over 800 locations. You can go to UrbaniteBaltimore.com for a list of those drop locations and pick it up. And when we come back from this break, we're going to talk about John Coltrane, the brain, music, and what that has in common, why it's all mixed up together. I want to remind you to call 443-885-2075. That's 443-885-2075. We need volunteers to come and work with us during WEAA's April Spring Membership Drive. And finally, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait Program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. We'll be right back with Dr. Charles Lim. Stay with us.